From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The grill is a fixture of American summer, a symbol of good times. Fire it up and mouths water. Chef Barton Seaver wants to make it great and bring it up to date. He's writing about the smoke, the flavors, a big range of things to grill, and sustainable grilling. This hour On Point, simple, delicious, sustainable grilling for summer with Chef Barton Seaver. You can join us on air or online where this conversation never ends. What's your go-to grilling menu? Are you ready to throw squash, sprouts, and bok choy into the mix? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now in the studio is Barton Seaver, acclaimed chef, conservationist, and author of Where There's Smoke, Simple, Sustainable, Delicious Grilling. You can find the recipes he's sharing with us today from his new book on our website, onpointradio.org. He's also author of For Cod and Country, Simple, Delicious, Sustainable Cooking. He's the Healthy and Sustainable Food Program Director at the Center for Health and Global Environment at Harvard's School of Public Health. Executive chef at 7 restaurants in his day, with a big eye on sustainability. Barton Seaver, welcome back to On Point. How great to have you here.
Oh, Tom, thanks for having me back. It's really lovely to see you again.
And I should stipulate right off the bat that the center of this enormous table we're at in the studio is groaning with a beautiful batch of very freshly barbecued, wonderful-looking food. We'll talk about it. If I faint, it's just because of this wonderful wood smoke scent in the air. Let's get right to that. We'll go to sustainability, but I've got to know about this scent. What did you grill this with? It smelled so wonderful before we even really get near it.
Yeah, well, this is a mixture of apple and cherry woods, actually, and two of my favorite woods, apple being sprightly, tangy, acidic in its nature, cherry wood being heavily aromatic but not big on flavor but also big on color. And so this roast chicken here, roasted on the grill over the smoke, it's a rich, robust, rustic hue.
Oh, it's a beautiful color. We've got a full half chicken here, and it's none of that sort of blackened chicken that we see so often. I mean, that is just almost a chestnutty, rich color. Part of the color comes from the cherry wood smoke itself?
Yeah, you know, all different kinds of woods have different chemical properties to them when they burn. And that's why you have hickory and mesquite being really at the top of the scale, really robust, muscular, angular smoke flavors. Mm-hmm. And then all the way at the bottom, I like to think peach wood. Peach is always almost always the queen of any category she's in. And peach wood is no different. It's charming, ebullient. It is vivacious, but also sort of understated. And everything else is in between. Applewood, I think, is really right in the middle.
Sustainable grilling. I want to stick with the wood here for a second, but let's just start with what that means in terms of making fire. Now, you don't have grilling without fire, without burning stuff. Mm-hmm. So where does sustainability come into that formula, or does it?
Well, I think it does, and I address this in the book merely because it's something that we need to pay attention to. Sustainability is not a separate topic, but rather I think it is the undercurrent of everything that we do. It is the sum of the choices we make.
In life, and in particularly life. In eating, one might say.
And particularly in eating, because I think ultimately we're trying to sustain ourselves by eating. And so you have to, I think, consider health, you have to consider environment, and you have to consider the context in which you are using that food. And I think that's one of the great joys of grilling, is that it's inherently celebratory, seasonal, social. To me, those are the very highest and best uses of food, bringing people together in a way that we're really conscious of the act of eating, of the act of communion, of coming together. And I think it just sets us in a mind state that we're most apt to absorb the lessons of sustainability and most apt to think about our expectations of what we're hoping to gain from eating.
And the aroma of this food has me in a mindset practically to faint. But you still got me at sustainable and burning. I mean, that is a smoke. That is, stuff in the atmosphere. That's carbon going up there. Mm-hmm. So here, as in so many parts of life, it's not that there's no footprint on the planet. There is. If you're going to grill, you're going to leave a footprint. How do you think about that burning part compared to, I don't know, you could just have a propane gas. Surely that'd be cleaner than wood smoke. Is this where you make your compromise with the gustatory?
Well, I think that certainly propane has a lower footprint because it takes less time to heat up. And when you're done, off. Yeah. It is done. You have ceased burning and emitting carbon dioxide. So I think just there, A, it burns cleaner, but also there's some efficiency that plays into this. And I think by and large from estimates, I would say it's about twice as efficient as burning charcoal.
A lot of people have propane grills behind their house, but you're going for wood smoke every time. Well, as a chef, you have to have that. Why?
Well, I think that the purpose of grilling is, A, you're stepping out of your normal bounds. You're moving your life outside, unless you're grilling indoors, which then you're a brave soul. But you're moving yourself outdoors, and there's something separate about it. And I just – when you grill, I love that smoke becomes an ingredient in the final dish.
Absolutely.
And so why not use it to its full effect? Now, that's not to say you can't get smoke off of a propane grill by just putting a few wood chips on to flavor.
Wood chips wrapped in foil, I think you said in the book, until they let off that flavor.
Certainly.
Well, the smoke is actually in the back of my throat right now. It's really with us here. Okay, take us to the charcoal and the wood. And what do you use? Do briquettes or do you use, lump charcoal? You're the chef. What's your fuel?
Well, I think everything has its place and purpose. And I'm, you know, barbecue grilling is a sport of passion. And so I'm sure to ignite some argument here.
Okay.
But so I'll just talk from my opinion and I'll just leave it at that.
Yes, please.
I like charcoal and I like briquette charcoal. I think it burns consistently. Mm-hmm. You know exactly what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. And you can. There's ways to minimize the impact of that just by a charcoal chimney. Those gadgets that they sell, just a simple chimney.
That is to get it started. You're not. Mm-hmm. You're not ladling on the starter fluid here, the sort of petrochemical, whatever that is in the bottle.
No. It doesn't taste very good.
No.
And I'm after a good tasting plate of food, so I'm not going to start off with a bottle of poison.
Right. So chimney is just the cylinder. You've got it stacked with newspaper at the bottom. Light the paper. Off goes the charcoal.
Yeah. Just a little bit of yesterday's news. It's a good way to send off the news of the day.
So there's your briquettes. Where's the wood come in if you're using briquettes?
Well, there's a number of ways to introduce wood, whether sawdust, whether it's chips, or whether it's chunks. And the difference there is how much heat you want to introduce via the wood.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to use chips and chunks. Chunks obviously burn a lot longer. They mm-hmm. have a lot more heat that they give off. Chips are really just to add a little bit of flavor, some real spunk to the food.
Mm-hmm.
And sawdust is really a very quick burn. It just gives it a quick injection of smoke, but it's not a lasting, undulating smoky flavor.
And how exactly do you do it? Let's say you've got some chunks of cherry wood or, mm-hmm. I mean, you've got all kinds of options here, hickory and alder and pecan even, apple you mentioned. Those chunks, are you burying them in the pile of embers? Are you laying them right on top? What's your style?
Well, this gets into another method that I explore in the book, which is indirect grilling. Mm-hmm. And when I do have the charcoal, I like to put it all in one side so that you can control how far away from the fire you are.
So you say this is a classic thing where you get all the briquettes fired up or the charcoal. Don't stack it in the middle, you say.
No.
Get it going and then move it to one side of your – you use a – hey, it's a Weber grill or is that round shape off to the side. Why?
Well, ever since Prometheus, we've been trying to control fire and doing a poor job of it. But we can control how far away from the fire we are.
Ask him in Arizona.
Sad news.
Yeah.
So – by putting it all on the side of the grill, you're allowing yourself control over how far away from the fire you are.
Okay.
And once you have these embers stacked, I just put the chunks of wood directly on top of that. Mm-hmm. And then I play with the airflow to choke the fire so that the wood smolders and puffs this billowing, beautiful, smoky, seductive flavor that permeates everything on the grill. That's what you're really looking for.
When you open the grill, is that chunk of wood going to be flaming?
Not always. And once you inject it with that airflow, certainly mm-hmm. it might come back because mm-hmm. that's the fuel the fire breathes. But by mitigating the airflow, you're really controlling the nature, the temper of the fire and of the smoke flavor.
Well, getting closer to the food here, take us to that interaction of wood smoke and food. What wood for what dish? You've got some sort of – it's almost like wine pairings, except burning wood pairings. What do you like for what?
Well, it certainly is like wine pairings. And every, as I mentioned before, every wood has its unique characteristic.
Aroma, even color.
Aroma, flavor, mm-hmm. taste, mm-hmm. Texture even. Mm-hmm. I tend to think that hickory wood smoke things are almost viscous on the palate, the mm-hmm. oily coating sheen that it seems to develop.
And what's that good for in your book?
Ooh, fatty pork. Mm-hmm. A nice pork shoulder, something like that. Mostly oak wood with a little bit of hickory or mm-hmm. mesquite thrown in there.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it depends on, as I said, sort of the muscularity of the smoke. And if you're doing a big fatty piece of beef shoulder or pork shoulder, you want something a little more robust. If you're doing something light and simple, like a fresh salmon, you want that cooler, more mild-tempered flavor of an alderwood smoke.
Okay.
If you're doing something like bluefish, I think you want, one of the staple favorites up here.
Nice oily fish.
Nice oily fish. It's going to be robust. It's going to be slightly acidic, tangy, and it's salty brine. I think with that, you want a really sort of a lazy smoke, something like a peachwood or a pecan, something that's really just kind of just ebullient but not really assertive.
And what about your mesquite? Or you even got sort of a splintered wine barrel wood in here. Where would you put those two?
Well, I think wine barrels are just the oak barrels that wine has been aged in for a period of years. And so obviously that permeates some of that wood. And when you burn that, those first few minutes, you get this unbelievable wine, heady, fruity alcohol smoke. They call it the angel's share.
Okay.
The wine that evaporates off into a winery. Well, you get that same sort of just gorgeous scent. And I really love this with cold smoked items, such as like a cold smoked salmon that you'd use for bagels and lox.
Wine barrel wood. And of course, mesquite. That's a much sharper thing.
Yeah, that's really, you're looking, I think with mesquite, you're really looking for things that have cumin, cilantro, coriander, chili peppers, things that really are assertive in their own flavors that are really going to match and balance with the muscular angularity of the mesquite.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about firing up the grill, sustainable grilling, the backyard cookout, barbecue 2013 with chef and conservationist Barton Seaver. His new book is Where There's Smoke, Simple, Sustainable, Delicious Grilling. And it is kind of a new path to a very, very, maybe the oldest style of preparing food over that open fire or that banked bank of embers, charcoal. Barton Seaver's with me in the studio, and he has got a wonderful sort of groaning board here of beautiful food that is just off the grill. We'll talk about each one, but describe what's in front of us here, Barton.
Well, the first thing I've got is what I call a venerable wine spritzer. The cocktail that has gotten such a bad name over the years, and possibly rightly so. But that is a just off-dry Riesling mixed with a little bit of Pernod or Vermouth, a spicy anisette flavor, garnished a little basil and club soda. It's a fun, crisp, lively, refreshing, low-alcohol way to start off a meal. And
you go there instead of straight to the wine bottle, pouring straight from the bottle, you go to the spritzer because what? Just sort of slows things down, freshens things up, stretches things out.
Yeah, and it's creative while using familiar ingredients. Nothing here is going to turn anyone off, but it's lower alcohol, and especially when you first set around a gathering on the grill and the summer swelter sun is just fading into eventide, you don't want to, hit them with the 14% Cabernet, 14% alcohol Cabernet right off the
boom,
bat.
You're gone. Wait. Let's savor the moment.
But here's the other thing. Is I hand you a glass of this,
yes,
and I hand you maybe a chilled buttermilk and cucumber soup flavored with dill. Guess what? Now you've got both hands free. And there's something about the primal urge of a grill that people just need to touch it.
Yeah.
You know what? If you got two hands full, you can't touch my grill. So the grill master is set off to his own task, and it's much easier that way.
We'll get to these specific dishes, but generally, when you talk about sustainable grilling, sort of paint the boundaries or the dimensions of your continent of ingredients here. Where are you looking when you talk sustainable?
Well, where I look for all meals is the aisle you walk into in the grocery store. The vegetable aisle. And when you're cooking on a grill, I mean, that smoky flavor is, as I said, it's an ingredient in the final dish. It is a highlighting, foundational flavor off of which all other flavors really play.
I flipped through your book here, and when we think grill, I think we tend to think meat, but there is a lot of vegetable in your sustainable grilling book.
Yeah, you don't even hit protein until more than halfway through the book, and that's very purposeful. I think all too often, as you said, when you think of grilling, it's just hamburgers, just hot dogs, and then there's some other stuff.
Hot dogs, burgers, sirloin or something if you're going fancy, and sometimes that's, very often even, that's it. Or chicken or sausages, you name it. There's a lot you could do, but a lot of people don't really get past the protein course.
Yeah, and that's getting back to the greenhouse gas of the cooking method that we were discussing. Mm-hmm. I think it doesn't matter so much how you cook things as it matters what you decide to cook. The vast majority of our footprint is found in the choices we make, in the production of the foods that we choose to eat. And when you have a meal that is based, as we have today in front of us, a brilliant ember-roasted butternut squash hummus made in the style of a traditional hummus, but with roasted butternut instead, that smoky aroma. You've got a roasted zucchini salad with grill-dried tomatoes flecked with fresh mint on top with just a little bit of lemon juice. You've got olives and capers and cocktail onions brined in that smoky flavor of olive oil. Woo, okay. And I haven't even mentioned the chicken yet.
There it is, but hold it to the side for a second. Is there anything you don't grill in the vegetable world? It looks like you go just about every direction here.
Yeah, I do. And I think I really think of grilling, and I wrote this book as a three seasons worth of recipes. And in there, you'll find things from the first snap peas of spring and asparagus of spring to a late autumn caponata with pumpkin or roasted butternut squash. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what could be more romantic than a setting sun on an autumnal day with a glass of warm mulled apple cider spiked with a little brandy standing around a warm fire pit, you know, gently puffing out smoke as you're grilling up a roast chicken and butternut squash.
So prepare us to address the vegetable aisle with a grilling evening in mind and the basic preparation here. I mean, how do you start to confront vegetables when you're thinking about the grill? This is not dumping in a pot of boiling water.
Well, I think it's really just becoming confident in the grill and getting back to something I said earlier about that indirect heat method of banking all the embers mm-hmm. over to mm-hmm. one side. Mm-hmm. What that does is it allows you incredible efficiency on your grill. You know, when we cook at home inside, mm-hmm. we've got our pasta water at a raging boil. We've got our sauteed chicken at medium high. We've mm-hmm. got a sauce maybe at low heat. Mm-hmm. We've got a vegetable steaming away at medium. We understand variable heat, but yet when we cook on a grill, it's just hot and that's it. But if you allow yourself to have a hot, a medium, and a low section, mm-hmm. you can be slowly smoldering your chicken over here on the low. You can be crisping kale directly over the fire. You can be searing up thinly sliced shaved fennel for like a coleslaw mm-hmm. Takeoff made with Greek yogurt and a little mm-hmm. bit of vinegar. Ooh,
I'm there.
Okay.
I'm
Sounds
there.
Fun.
Well, take us to your hummus then. This is ember roasted squash hummus. Just how do I do this? How do I get started? How do I make this lovely dish with a little pond of olive oil in the middle?
Well, this is pretty easy, and this is something I learned when I was wandering around in the Sahara Desert with a Berber tribesman. And
that's where I learned most of what I know.
No, you take a butternut squash and you bury it in your embers. And, in the skin, and you just throw the whole thing.
Just raw, right in.
Yep,
it goes.
Right in there.
Okay.
And then you forget it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you come back to it when you remember. And, the outside is burned to a charred, crisp, black hull. Fine. But the inside has been protected, and it's got this sweet, smoky aroma, and the juices from the inside are steaming it from inside. You're not adding any flavor, but really just enhancing, reducing those flavors. Pull it out, let it cool down, and then just scrape out all the good, meaty flesh in there and just puree it.
That's amazing. And it's going to be all right inside. It's going to be soft and ready to eat.
Yeah. And the outside, it'll protect it from the ash and all that stuff. And so it's just a direct heat cooking method.
Okay. Basically. So the squash is now edible, soft, and we begin to season it. What's the seasoning here?
Lemon juice, tahini, the sesame seed mm-hmm. paste and oil, just a little bit of garlic and olive oil. Pureed up just like a classic hummus.
Something sprinkled on top here.
That's a little bit of red chili flake. Oh, I like a little kick to things.
That looks beautiful. Take us right on across here. You've got your zucchini. How about preparation here?
That's as easy as just cutting it into little triangles or dice and then throwing it in a grill basket directly over the heat.
Yeah. And just are we in your hot or medium or coolest section here?
Medium to hot.
Okay.
And so, zucchini is not going to take too long to cook. You just want to give it
5, 10, 15, depends.
Probably 3 to 5 minutes, depending mm-hmm. on the size of the cut. And it wilts down. You don't need to cook it till it's mush. It just wilts, so it's soft on the outside, but maybe a little al dente throughout. And then it's just got some
dried tomatoes here. It looks like mint or something.
Dried tomatoes and mint. Mint is one of my favorite ingredients. And, gardeners are always complaining. It's like, I can't control my mint. Well, that's because you're not eating enough of it.
right.
Throw it in your drinks. Throw it in your salads. Throw it in everything.
That's great. We've got callers here with grilling stories of their own. I want to begin to get them into our conversation. Barton Seaver is with us, chef, conservationist, author of the new, beautiful, wonderful cookbook, Where There's Smoke, Simple, Sustainable, Delicious Grilling. And he's talking sustainability here. Mike in Nashville, Tennessee is calling. Hi, Mike, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. What an honor.
Great to have you.
What, and also one of my favorite topics also, you and barbecue.
Wonderful.
I had a question. I had a comment I would like to just throw in. I have actually placed in a couple small-town barbecue contests, and neither time with a pork or a beef dish. I actually placed second one time with a fish taco recipe that I did on about $200 worth of equipment, two Weber grills and a little old smoker. And last year, I placed second in a griller's choice with a vegetarian dish that my wife and I had developed. So it just kind of goes to show you don't have to throw meat on there all the time. You can grill anything on there.
I love it, Mike. Describe a barbecue or grilling contest in Nashville. How many people show up, and what do you see on those grills?
Well, I actually didn't do it in Nashville.
Okay.
I did it in my hometown up in southwestern Indiana, a town called Vincennes, Indiana, and they had it in conjunction with their watermelon contest. So it's kind of a home reunion for me to go back to my wife and my hometown. There were 17 teams, I think, and believe me, the whole square is nothing but it's a hickory smoke. It's kind of a neat sight. There's a lot of camaraderie and walking around and sampling. Of course, you cook what you're going to enter, but you cook a lot more, too, and you feed each other, and you feed passerbys, and you feed your friends and family that have stopped by to hang out in your little area.
Oh.
One thing I take pride in is I don't have $10,000 worth of equipment. I've got one of your good old Weber kettle grills. I've got the little small one. Then I've got a smoker that my father-in-law won in a golf tournament one time. So I kind of take pride in being Mr. Low Tech and still have had some success. So.
I love it. I'm delirious for it. Describe your vegetarian dish. We got your fish taco. Barton's got one, too. What's the vegetarian dish that you put out?
Well, we grilled corn. We grilled poblano peppers. Mm-hmm. We grilled avocado. We grilled, I believe, some another kind of pepper. And then after that, we wrapped them in bib lettuce packets, poured a little bit of hot sauce that I'd made with a bunch of different stuff, including some agave nectar and whatnot on there for some heat. And then my wife, who's very tedious, can be very, very tedious. No, that's the wrong word. But she tied them up into little packets using chives that she split wrong. So we had little tiny lettuce packets with grilled vegetables inside.
I just love this. Let's compare fish taco recipes. Barton, what's your fish taco approach?
Buy the best fish you can possibly find, because there's no trick, tip, technique, or anything that can make up for a bad piece of fish.
And you do have one in here in your grill lineup, don't you?
Yeah,
or am I dreaming?
I think there's somewhere in there. And
what's your seasoning? Do you recall?
You know, I like a little smoked paprika.
Yeah.
I like a little bit achiote chili powder or something. You want to introduce some of that southwestern flavor to it, but I think that mesquite smoke is just a little bit too strong for any fish. So you want to introduce that robust flavor without, I think, overpowering the fish, because ultimately it's a fish taco, the first word being fish.
Yes, that's
what you want to taste. But
Mike in Nashville, what's your seasoning? What's your approach to a fish taco there?
Tilapia that I marinated in a cilantro, tequila, lime, cumin, jalapeno, all kinds of good, what you normally associate with southwestern dishes. Basically, that's the secret to it. But then also, my wife developed, we're backyard foodies, and my wife developed a really good red cabbage slaw, I guess you would call it. And I think that's what really made it, was that slaw that we put on there, and then a little bit of crema, you know, some cream with some adobo chili in it.
Well, I can see why you placed second.
Yeah, Mike, I think you should have placed first. That blue ribbon belonged on, it sounds to me, on your grill. You and Barton Seaver are really riding some of the same wavelengths here, and it's terrific to hear that. It's just great, Mike. Good luck with your grilling this summer. Yeah. Just great to have you. Thanks for joining us. Let me get one more right here. Brian's calling from Mississauga in Ontario, Canada. Brian, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Well, hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I'm going to be going on a long motor trip across America in a couple of weeks.
Lucky you.
Driving down to New Mexico, and it's a bucket list thing.
Yeah.
I'm bringing my barbecue.
Nice.
It's my trusty little barbecue. It's 18 inches in diameter, and it gets the job done. And I was wondering if your guests had any suggestions on, what to cook. Maybe if I could get something going while I'm pitching tent.
Grilling on the road, grilling on the road trip. I love it, Brian. I mean, I'm already anticipating that end of the day stop off and busting out the 18-inch grill. Barton, I see you sort of running that through your chef's mind. Okay, you're grilling on the road. You're going across the USA, sort of north to south here. How do you think about, first of all, just the mechanics of it, and then what's going to work in transit?
Well, actually, you know, the mechanics of it, my whole book is shot, and everything I cook is on an 18-inch Weber grill.
Yes.
And that's all the space I've found I've ever needed. I've done dinner for 20 off that thing. I've had less inches on my grill than I've had people at my table, so
this half chicken we haven't even come to yet looks like it's at least 12 inches all on its own in length.
But, you know, I think that this dish, I think, is one of those perfect ones. This chicken has been brined. Mm-hmm. So the day before brine, you can throw a chicken or a pork tenderloin or something in a brine. Let it sit over.
In a plastic bag in the boot, in the trunk.
Absolutely.
Or maybe.
And then, you know, when you as soon as you pull in, light up your fire and throw your chicken, throw your pork tenderloin right on there away from the heat. So it's got a slow smoldering smoke to it, and cover the grill. The grill cover is really the key to good grilling.
To containing the flavors.
You know, otherwise you're just cooking from the bottom to the top, and you're not really cooking the top because all your heat is escaping.
Mm-hmm.
So when you capture that heat, you're using a lot less heat to actually cook the ingredient. Now, Brian, this roast chicken might take 45 minutes to an hour to cook, maybe a little bit more, but hey, you know, your road trip's done for the day, so kick back, have a beer, have a glass of wine, sit back, set up your tent, and by the time your tent is set up and you are in the mood to eat, well, hey, your chicken's ready for you.
What about brining on the road? I said casually in the trunk, but that's a little hot here. The chicken might not be so good after a few hours back there crossing Kansas or wherever Brian's going to be. What do you maybe keep it up in the AC while you're in the heat
or,
of the day,
or just buy it fresh right before you do? The brine is not so necessary that it should prevent you from doing the dish. But I think also, you know, if you're traveling the country, I think, you know, do a little research ahead of time about what ingredients, what cuisines you're like to find in the stopover places, and, you know, try and replicate that, because that's really the fun of grilling.
Sure, and you can keep it local and have it changing every day when you're on
every
the road.
Day.
Samantha in New Orleans, Louisiana. Samantha, you're on the air with Barton Siever.
Hi. I just recently got this very old little grill and a charcoal chimney from my grandmother. I'm an absolute novice when it comes to grilling, and I was just wondering if I could get any tips on where to start.
The ABCs. She's got her grill. She's got her chimney to start it. Get her started, Barton.
Sure. Well, congratulations on that, and I think that speaks to the great heritage and tradition of grilling, that a grill could be passed down from grandmother to granddaughter. I think that's what makes it so special. In terms of the ABCs, you know, it's all about the fire and about the ingredients you buy. You know, you don't need to make anything super special on the grill. And I think all too often people have this idea that, you know, cooking must be super creative. And in the process, you end up adulterating the ingredients. Mm-hmm. Set a fire. You know, use that indirect heat method that I was explaining earlier so that you can really gain as much control over the fire,
letting it get down to embers.
Let it get down to embers and put it all in one place so that you can control how far away
one
from it you are.
One side of the grill, yeah.
And then, you know what? Just be brave. I think that's really the key to grilling is get yourself set up. Make sure you've got tongs, towels. Mm-hmm. Make sure you've got platters to put, you know, to take your raw chicken off of. Mm-hmm. Make sure you've got a second platter to put your cooked chicken onto.
Clean and hygienic.
Clean and hygienic. Safety is always top of mind. You know, once you get yourself set up, I think the best ingredient in grilling is just to make sure you enjoy yourself.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about firing up the grill, sustainable grilling. The Backyard Cookout 2013 with chef and conservationist Barton Siever. He is Healthy and Sustainable Food Program Director at the Center for Health and Global Environment at Harvard's School of Public Health and author of the beautiful new cookbook, Where There's Smoke, Simple, Sustainable, Delicious Grilling. Barton Siever is with me in the studio, and I just can't wait another second. I'm getting a little bit of this chicken. Oh, my gosh, that is just beautiful. Seasoning here, the wood you said was cherry and...
Applewood.
Apple.
Yeah, and it's good. Seasoning is just a brine overnight, and that's why you can see it's still glistening moist.
Crazy.
Exuding all that moisture and flavor, and that's really what a brine does, but also slow, purposeful heat. You know, I think all too often...
I can tell that. I mean, this is the furthest thing from that charred chunk of meat of chicken.
I think all too often a mistake that's commonly made is too much heat. And it's just too violent. It's too...
You've got a half chicken here. How long would you guess that would have taken at the slow heat you use?
Yeah, that was about an hour and 10 minutes or so. And
wow.
That was a pretty big chicken. That was a 4.5 pounder.
But that's really taking your time.
Yeah.
Is that over in your coolest part of the grill?
Exactly. So, and that...
Oh, good heavens. I've got some of this butternut squash hummus with us here as well. That's just... there's no chickpea in there? That's just the texture of squash?
It's just the squash.
What a great idea. And the grill gives it that smoky flavor that we associate, I guess, plus the tahini, but with hummus. But it's in squash here because it's on the grill.
And hey, that's a vegetable. You know, that's
well,
doing,
sure enough.
That's doing good for yourself right there.
Yes.
What I love about this is you're going to have some left over because the recipe calls for one butternut squash. And then that's a lot of food, one butternut. So you're going to have some left over. Think about that in place of mayonnaise on your sandwich tomorrow.
Oh, Lord. That's just fantastic. Just great. And the zucchini here, very zesty with your mint there and your sun-dried tomato or your dried tomato. And what's the what the seasoning? Something else here. No?
No, just a little bit of lemon juice and mixed in with the – so, yeah.
That is just fantastic.
It's punchy, but it's fun, but it's bright and ebullient. So.
Here's – we've got a lot of people waiting to talk to you, but also online. Oh, forgive me. I don't want to stop, but I will. Zach on Facebook says, I love to grow vegetables, especially baby bok choy when it's in season. I trim it and have it and grill it until slightly charred and then toss it in a bowl with little hoisin sauce and sesame oil. Always a hit. Sounds good to me, Bart.
That's fabulous, yeah.
I've got some bok choy in here as well.
Yeah, in that recipe, I do very much the same thing. You know, young, tender heads of bok choy, cut them in half, just brush them with olive oil, throw them on the grill until, exactly as Zach said, just charred, crispy, the leaves, but the stalks are still a little bit al dente, crisp to the bite. And then I just take them off, dress them with a little bit of olive oil, thin shavings of Parmesan cheese, and a couple lashings of fresh cracked black pepper. Just taking in a different cultural tradition than Zach does, but really just wonderful, fun dish.
I'm ready to go either direction, east or west there. Here's John writes to us on the website. It says, I live in Brazil, and barbecue, churrasco, is huge here. He says, one of the most common dessert barbecue items is simple and delicious. Simply put a banana, still contained in the peel, on the grill until it's almost black on all sides. Take it off, cut it open, sprinkle some cinnamon on it, and you have a super easy barbecue dessert, John writes to us.
That sounds amazing. I've got something similar that I love to do is when you're done cooking your savory dishes and you're all sitting down to a meal, the last thing I do is I choke the fire of air from the bottom, I choke the airflow from the top, and I put a couple of halved peaches directly over those dying embers. And I put the lid right back on, and I sit down to dinner.
Yeah.
And about an hour later, we're a bottle of wine in, you know, we're having fun, everybody's, and you're just beginning to come out of that, you know, the rich food and coma, and you're just kind of thinking about, well, what else would I possibly want in the world right now? Oh, something sweet. If only I had grilled peaches.
And the texture of those peaches after that, I don't know, what is that, a half an hour or something on the grill?
Half hour, 45 minutes on a dying flame, and what happens is the skins just wilt a little bit, and the flesh of the peach just sort of melts a little
bit. Like a custard, maybe.
Exactly, but it maintains its shape and form, and just barely crispy and crunched on one side as those sugars caramelize into a hard crust, and just a little bit of balsamic vinegar or a scoop of vanilla ice cream, and guess what? You'd say, yeah, Barton, you really love me. Thank you.
I love it. Peter in Nashville, Tennessee. Peter, you're on the air with Barton Siever.
Hi, how are you? This is one of your best shows ever, Tom.
All right. Where are we headed with you, Peter?
I'm wondering about tofu. What's the secret to good grilled tofu?
I hadn't even thought of it, and I don't remember if it's here or not, but how about it, Barton? Tofu.
Well, I don't tend to cook a lot of tofu, but it works very well in using the same methods, and I think giving it a seasoning ahead of time, and I like a dry seasoning on tofu.
Would you have to fry it first to give it the body or not?
No, you're using a firm tofu, not the soft, and I think one of the spice mixtures that I have in there that I particularly like for grass-fed beef works particularly well with tofu as well, and what it is, it's salt, just a touch of sugar, smoked paprika, and cinnamon.
And what's the cinnamon give you? A little pop, a little edge.
Yeah, but it's not enough cinnamon or enough sugar to notice either of them are there. But the sugar caramelizes and becomes sticky, and so the smoke has something to absorb into. Mm-hmm. And furthermore, the cinnamon gives it this gamey appeal. It just gives it this robust flavor. And tofu, and beef even, can mm-hmm. be pretty monochromatic
sure,
in terms
yes,
of flavor
yeah,
after
sure.
the fourth bite or so.
That's right.
But that cinnamon just gives it this enlivened sort of character.
Standing up there, yeah.
That just keeps the palate just interested enough, being like, what is that? Why is this? Mm.
Hey, let's remember, cinnamon's a bark. So we were still in our sort of grilling mode there.
Exactly.
Susan in Boston is calling. Susan, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
My daughter was recently diagnosed with an allergy to most trees, including hickory.
Oh.
Would it be okay to use hickory and still offer her the food from the grill?
Ooh, Dr. Wow. Seaver, now you carry a large responsibility here.
Well,
what do you say?
I can't speak to that from a medical profession here, but I would say on the safe side, no. My wife is very allergic to hazelnuts,
mm-hmm.
and we recently discovered that there's a blue cheese that's smoked over hazelnut shells.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I love my wife too much to risk it. Blue cheese is good, but my wife is awfully better.
And after all, yes. And what you burn, what turns to smoke, what you're going to breathe it, and let alone eat it. I mean, I remember a campfire as a kid where there was turned out poison ivy on some of the firewood, and one of my mates got dreadfully in trouble with that poison ivy smoke getting into his lungs. Susan, maybe caution the better path here on that. Allison in Woburn, Massachusetts. Allison, you're on the air.
Hi, great show.
Thank you.
I am a big fan of long, slow grilling, and I'm having trouble finding a favorite fuel, and I wondered what you like, Barton, as far as something that will last for hours and keep kind of a steady low temperature.
Long, slow, so you're talking almost barbecuing in the southern style there, where you're really almost smoking, Allison, at that duration.
Exactly. I'm from Tennessee, so.
Okay, good. What do you say, Barton?
Well, I think there's a couple of methods. I'd prefer the lump briquette, as I said earlier, I think, for most cases.
Mm-hmm.
There's ways to build your fire, and I'm not particularly well-versed on this and the method. I can't recall the name of it, but you build basically a pyramid out of your charcoal, and you burn basically the inside and it just slowly burns out. Now, it's very interesting to me because it prolongs the burn, but it also introduces new charcoal and that acrid black smoke throughout the process. So I'm not sure actually how effective that is. For this case, I would start a fire with a large pile of the briquette charcoal.
Mm-hmm.
I would really choke it for air, which is going to prolong the burn.
Okay.
And then I would add large chunks of wood. And even in a small Weber grill, large chunks, about fist size.
Okay.
And with that airflow choked just to a sliver on the bottom, what's going to happen is that fire is going to last for many, many hours. And you're going to get that slow, durable heat, but also that, you know, unctuous flavor of those long, slow smoked items.
Nicola asks online, where does one purchase the chips and chunks of wood used for grilling? And asks, should they be soaked?
Well, there's a number of sources online, which are in the back of the book. And so you can find them anywhere. And most stores these days, from Whole Foods to Stop and Shop, you name it, might have a bag of Jack Daniel's wood chips or apple wood chips or something by the meat case even.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're readily available. But I think just a very quick internet search will yield a specialty store. And you know, if you're really into it, yeah, buy a 5-pound box of this stuff. And I've got 13, 14 kinds of wood sitting around my house
ready
at all
to
times.
Go, depending what you're grilling. Luke in Framingham, Massachusetts. Luke, you're on the air with Barton Seaver.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Martin, nice to talk to you guys today. Oh. I just have a real quick question. Hickory wood chips. I have a buddy who's a landscaper. Can you just chip this stuff up right off the lawn and throw it on the grill, or do you have to dry it, or, you know, what's the technique there? I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks
for Luke.
Great
conversation.
Sure. Thank you. Wood prep. What do you say, Barton?
Well, the most important thing is to make sure that it is untreated wood.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like your landscape architect buddy is dealing with live trees that are being processed.
You don't want something sort of 2x4s for the deck that
exactly.
are treated with preservative.
Oof, that is bad news.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a hickory tree just cut down, chipping it up, but it needs a little while to cure. And
okay.
green wood is full of water. It's full of resin and sap
sure.
and all these things that prevent a clean burn and
mm-hmm.
also give you some pretty off flavors. if you have chipped it up already, it cures really pretty quickly, just in a month. And also getting back to a comment just a little earlier, to soak or not. Mm-hmm. Wood does not absorb water very well. In fact, once it is cured, it is pretty much impermeable to water. I've soaked wood chunks before overnight, fully submerged in warm water. And when I cut them in half the next day, just the surface was wet.
Yep.
And furthermore,
this is not a potato that's going to soak it all the way to
exactly.
the center.
And furthermore, wood smokes when it's burning. Mm-hmm. And so if your wood is wet, all you're doing is steaming off the water until you can reach the combustion point.
Yeah.
So all you're doing is slowing down your fire and reducing the amount of control you have. So I say never soak.
Choose that wood well all on its own. Get it cured a little dry and off you go. Let's go to Oklahoma, Oklahoma City, and Jeff. Jeff, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Great show. Grilling is one of my passions, so great to hear this. I did have a question. There's a local organic buffalo farm here in Oklahoma up in Logan County, and I recently procured some organic buffalo fillets.
Okay.
And I use hardwood briquettes now, and I have these, and I'm just curious. I've never grilled it before. What your guests might say would be the best way to grill these?
Organic buffalo fillets. I'm having a kind of semiotic, philosophical, I don't know, brainstorm just over that idea in itself. But Jeff's got them there in Oklahoma City. How would you approach a buffalo fillet?
Well, buffalo is really lean, and this gets into a technique that I espouse throughout the book, which is instead of cooking a number of portions for each, you know, one portion per each person, I recommend actually cooking one very large portion for multiple people.
So you don't get as much exposure of the meat to the flame, where you get into the whole issue of what's carcinogenic here.
Exactly. But you're also reducing the surface area. By reduced surface area, you now have less opportunity for moisture and evaporation and fat exudation.
Mm-hmm.
And so by cooking, instead of making four tornadoes of meat, you know, a fist-sized portion, you've got one large tube of that meat, and you can sear it directly over the hottest part of the grill for just a minute, 2 minutes.
Let's talk your 18-inch grill. How many pounds of buffalo fillet would you like to have in a single piece here?
Depends on how many people we're having over for dinner.
Okay, so, but you've got six, or eight. But in terms of grilling, what's your favorite size to work with for that ratio of size to preparation?
You know, I think a 25 to 30 ounce hunk of meat is really generous. And it gets into not only do you get a better product quality off of the grill because you can really sear it without without the risk of overcooking the inside. So you get that charred caramel crust on the outside, but then you can move it over away from the fire, and you can get the benefit of that slow, gentle cooking process where it really absorbs the smoke. But here's the real benefit, is that when you sit down to a table and I bring over this 25-ounce giant piece of fillet, and you look at it and you say, wow, that is really generous. The psychology of satiety, that box has been checked. We feel as though we will be satiated here. This generous, generous gift.
Yes.
But what's funny is that when I do this, people only end up eating 3 ounces of meat because I slice it bacon thin, these sheens of meat glistening with the moisture inside, that crackling caramel crust on the outside. And because the meat is so tasty, just like bacon, you know, you don't ever sit down to eat 8 ounces of bacon.
No, you don't.
And the meat is so flavorful and rich that you only need just a few slices to become fully, satiated and just fully satisfied with your meal.
That sounds just great. Gosh, off to the races with organic buffalo fillets. We got one more from Oklahoma, Blackwell, Oklahoma. Marie is on the air. Hi, Marie. Thanks for calling.
Hi.
Hi.
I would like to know what to use cherry wood for. I have a lot of cherry wood.
Marie, it says here that you're sitting on your tractor right now as you ask this question. Are you near the cherry trees?
No.
We'll pick it up. Marie's calling from her tractor, and she's got cherry wood. What do you want to grill here?
Well, cherry wood is very high on aroma. It's very high on color, but it doesn't deliver a whole lot of the flavor components.
So I noticed with this chicken, this delicious chicken here, you mixed it with something. It was an apple alongside.
Yep. So that apple is really where the flavor comes from. The cherry is where that unbelievable deep chestnut rusty color comes
from. Almost like a beautiful piece of cherry wood furniture, the color of this chicken that you've grilled that
almost
way.
Almost that, you know, minwax finished stain. I mean, it's gorgeous.
It is gorgeous just to look at.
But one thing I would suggest, Marie, is that really you're looking for the trunk wood or the large scion branches here.
Mm-hmm.
The small little tender snap branches, those are going to have such a high ratio of bark to wood, mm-hmm. and the bark has a much more deep flavor to it.
What foods are going to pick up the color of the cherry best? I mean, chicken does, obviously, here.
Well, things that are going to show the color. Mm-hmm. So whiter fish, mm-hmm. salmon will mm-hmm. pick up that roseate hue mm-hmm. to it. Chicken certainly just looks amazing.
And then bring in some other wood alongside that cherry maybe to richen the flavor. You said apple. What others might work alongside the cherry?
Pecan, peach, mm-hmm. I think staying with the orchard woods, even citrus woods, some of my favorites, lime, lemon, orange, really do add a wonderful appeal. And just looking at a photo in the book right now, actually throwing a little piece of a cinnamon bark in there with the cherry wood just offers this unbelievable seductive flavor to it that is so enticing and intoxicating. And what I love about it, it's like perfume. It's not too much. You know, don't ever want to be awash in perfume.
Scent. Just that little scent.
Just a scent to turn your head to
Marie,
wonder the source.
Try that when your tractor gets back to the house, maybe this evening, maybe on the 4th of July. We've got our Brazilian banana dessert. Do you have another in here quickly for us, Martin?
You know, grilled pears. Pears are frustrating to eat raw, so grill them up. You know, they're never quite ripe enough, so you grill them up to wilt them down and maybe a basil-infused sour cream.
It is so beautiful, and this food still, after our hour, so aromatic. I seldom am in a hurry to get off the air, but with this food sitting in front of us, I'm ready to eat. Listeners, I hope you've got some good ideas here for your 4th of July cookout with family and friends. It is a beautiful way to go. Barton Seaver's book is Where There's Smoke, Simple, Sustainable, Delicious Grilling. Barton Seaver, it's always great to have you with us. Thanks for pulling all this beautiful grilling together. Thanks for joining us.
A real pleasure.
Listeners, have a great holiday when you get to it. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.